So go ahead and turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 5. Ecclesiastes chapter 5, we're going to be looking at the second part of 5 and the first part of chapter 6 today. And we're going to be talking about a pastor's favorite subject to talk about, and that is the topic of money. Money. When I saw the passage that we're going to be looking at, and I saw that we were going to talk about money today, I have to admit, the first thing that came to my mind was that song about money. You know, the money, money, money. You know what I'm talking about here? Maybe some of you do? Okay. But I thought about it. I couldn't remember any of the other lyrics to the songs. So I went and I used some of my sermon prep time, I'm just admitting this to you, to look up the lyrics to that song. But I was shocked when I looked at them because they were very wise lyrics. So can I read a few to you? Okay, so let me read some to you. And just to get you a little bit in the mood here, we'll put on just a little bit of background music as well. All right, so the writer says, "Some people gotta have it, and some people really need it. Listen to me, why, let's turn that down a little bit, please, thank you." Yeah, I'm not singing it. "Listen to me, why you do things, do bad things with it. For the love of money, people will steal from their mother. For the love of money, people will rob from their own brother. For the love of money, people can't even walk the street because they never know who in the world they're gonna beat. For the lean, mean, green, almighty dollar, money." All right, let's cut it. Now, what wisdom there is in that passage, or not passage, but in those words there in that song. We all want it. We all think we need it. But it can lead us to do bad things. And if I didn't know any better, I would say whoever wrote that song had first read Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and 6. Listen to what Solomon says in chapter 6, verses 1 and 2. He says, "I have seen another evil under the sun, and it weighs heavily on mankind. God gives some people wealth, possessions, and honor, so they lack nothing their hearts desire. But God does not grant them the ability to enjoy them. The strangers enjoy them instead. This is meaningless, a grievous evil." And so Solomon was one of the wealthiest men alive, at least at that time, and counting inflation and all that, conversion rates, he was possibly one of the wealthiest men. So he had it all. And if there was anyone who could speak about money and the fulfillment that it brings or the lack of fulfillment that it brings, it would be him. It would be Solomon. And rich Solomon says this. He says, "Money does not satisfy." It just doesn't satisfy. So even when you lack nothing, you still end up wanting more. Now, why is that? Why is it that when we are not satisfied, or that why is it that we're not satisfied with money? I want to try to illustrate this. So, I need a volunteer. How many of you, is Owen there? Owen, do you want to come up again? No, not that you're like, "I did it before." Okay, I don't know your name, but come on up. You can help me out here. So I'm assuming you are Owen's brother. And what's your name? What is that? Isaac. Okay, so let's give Isaac a hand here as he comes up. So, Isaac, do you brush your teeth? At least when your parents force you, right? So my parents forced me, and I eventually got in the habit of doing it. And I have these pearly whites thanks to my brushing and flossing. So I want to show you how I brush and floss, and maybe you can take some of these what we might call strategies and tactics home, and you can share it with your family. Is that good? So the first thing is flossing. And when I floss, I don't use just regular floss. I actually use Oreo cookies to floss with. So are you allowed to have Oreo cookies? Okay. So go ahead and grab one. And what we do with our Oreo cookies is, so you know when you floss, you have to get between the teeth. So you're just going to take this and just start working on those teeth. So can you do that?
Each tooth, yeah.
And make sure you always want to get those back ones. So, Okay, and the top one.
Yeah.
Now, don't you feel cleaner already? And go ahead. You can eat it. Yep. I'm gonna put that down. Now, the next thing after we floss is that we have to brush. Do you have a particular toothpaste that you like to brush with? No? Okay. I don't use toothpaste. I'm a little bit old school. I prefer to brush with relish. And then on top of that, I put a little bit of mustard. So we're going to go ahead and give that a try. Let me give you, I have a brand new toothbrush, though on my way up, I did spill a little bit of juice on it. But go ahead and grab that. And here's a cup in case anything needs to come out. Here's my cup. So go ahead and just hold the toothbrush over the cup. So I don't want to get anything on our clean carpet. The custodian here is like, she is like very strict about this stuff. So she would yell at me. So we're just going to put a little bit of relish. And then we're going to put a little bit of mustard. Do you like mustard? No? Oh, man. What, do you want to get the mustard off then? You can do just relish if you want. Want to do that? Okay. Do you want your brother to come up and do this instead? Well, we're committed now. So, all right. So let me just get mine. So I'm going to get my relish and my mustard. I did this at the 9:30, so I already have pretty clean teeth. But there. Okay, you ready to brush? So you just go ahead.
And you just start. Just brush away. Now, after this, if you were married, this would be a perfect time to give your wife a kiss because, excuse me, I normally...
Okay, we'll move on. I'm gonna assume you're not going to do that part, but make sure you brush like that tonight, okay? So we'll take this away. And then the last thing that we need to do is mouthwash. Do you do mouthwash at home? Okay. Well, I don't use mouthwash. I use prune juice. Prune juice is very good. So here you go. Here's a little bit. On my way up, I spilled some, and it got all over our nice downstairs clean hallway. But... And my pants, by the way, but all right. So we just take a little bit of it. You don't like prune juice either. Okay. All right. I will not have you come up and do this at the 6 p.m. then. Okay. All right. Let's give him a hand as he goes down. Now, I noticed some of you were laughing at us. Some of you thought that that was a little bit strange. And so what's the problem? Why were you laughing? And the problem came from us taking something that was not bad in and of itself. Relish, in my opinion, is not bad. Prune juice, maybe. But relish and mustard, not bad. But we were using it for the wrong purpose. We were using it for the wrong purpose. When you take food, like Oreos, and you try to use it for the purpose of flossing, then you end up, what, with a dirty mouth. Now, here's my point. Just like relish should not be used to brush teeth, money should not be used to attain satisfaction. Now, many of us think, if I just had this much, then I will be happy. Then I would be happy. And while none of us would laugh at that statement, saying something like that is more absurd than trying to brush your teeth with relish. It just is. And it's not that the food is bad in and of itself. It's just that it was not designed to be like that. Food was not designed to floss. It was not designed to brush. And likewise, pursuing satisfaction from money is not its design. Money was not designed to bring us satisfaction. In fact, in our passage, Solomon is going to give us five reasons why money is really bad at giving satisfaction. Five reasons why money won't satisfy. And so I'm going to start working our way through these. And then once we get through these, I'll talk about what this means for us. And so let's go ahead and turn to chapter 5, verse 10, to the very beginning of our passage. And he's going to first say, the first reason why money won't satisfy is that you will never have enough. You will never have enough. He says, whoever loves money never has enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with their income. This too is meaningless. So here's the danger with money. That there is never a point when we will say, I have enough. I'm good. John D. Rockefeller was one of the richest men in the world during the time that he was alive. And he was once asked, how much is enough money? And he responded, just a little bit more. Just a little bit more. Or to use a more modern example, Homer Simpson once said to his boss, he said, you're the richest man I know. And Mr. Burns responded, yes, but I'd trade it all for a little more. Now we scoff at this, we laugh at this, but we can also identify with these sentiments. And so let's just take it to its logical conclusion that if money is what brings satisfaction, yet we will never have enough of it, how will we get satisfied? How will we get satisfied? If that's what we are looking to for satisfaction, yet we're not going to have enough of it, how is it going to make us satisfied? You will never have enough. So that's the first reason why money won't satisfy. Here's the second reason. He says that you will attract leeches. That you'll attract leeches. Verse 11. As goods increase, so do those who consume them. And what benefit are they to the owners except to feast their eyes on them? Bernie Kosar was a star quarterback in the 80s and 90s, and when he played, he made tens of millions of dollars. And then after he played, through business deals and sponsorships, he made tens of millions more dollars. Yet in 2009, he had to file for bankruptcy protection. His assets were listed between $1 and $10 million, while his liabilities were listed between $10 and $50 million. And so a reporter asked about this, and Kosar revealed that at one time he was paying for 60 cell phone plans, and he only had one of them, meaning that friends, family, teammates, all these people were asking him for help, for money, and he was shelling it out. So he began to lose money by loaning it out to people, by helping people, and also by business people who would take advantage of his money and end up losing it. And so Solomon says, hey, as goods increase, so do those who consume them. So the more you have, the more people you have that want what you have. Here's the third reason why money won't satisfy is that you will lose sleep. He says in verse 12, the sleep of a laborer is sweet, whether they eat little or much, but as for the rich, their abundance permits them no sleep. And so Solomon is saying that those non-wealthy people who work for their money, they sleep a lot better than the wealthy people. They sleep a lot better because the rich, in their abundance of things, in their concern of things, end up having a more difficult time sleeping. Excuse me. I read about a woman who has a rare condition called superior autobiographical memory. And when I read about that, I was like, I want that. But then I read further and I said, never mind. I'll just remain as not so smart, Kyle. University experts from University of California, they studied her. And they said that, yes, she does indeed have a superior memory. She can remember vividly everything from the age of 14, vividly. But there's a downside to this as well. She can remember vividly everything from the age of 14. And so she's constantly plagued by every bad decision, by every embarrassment, by every insult that was made. And now, at I don't know what age she was when she was studied, but now she is paralyzed by fear and rarely sleeps peacefully. So this lady, it's this accumulation of thoughts that keeps her from sleeping well. And that's what Solomon is saying. It's the accumulation of things that keeps you from sleeping well. Fourth reason he gives is in verse 13. He says, you will be just flat out miserable. You'll be miserable. I have seen a grievous evil under the sun. When he says under the sun, he's saying here on earth. Wealth hoarded to the harm of its owner, or wealth lost through some misfortune, so that when they have children, there's nothing left for them to inherit. And skipping to verse 17, all their days they eat in darkness, with great frustration, affliction, and anger. There was an interesting article that came out a while back, and it was written by a non-Christian, and it was titled, What Wealth Does for Your Soul. And the main idea of the article that the guy was writing, he said that money, the more money that you make, the more selfish, dishonest, and unhappy you will be. Now, this is not coming from a pastor or from a Christian. This is a non-Christian study. And the article studied, it revealed that the richer the people are, the more likely they are to cut people off while driving, the more likely they are to not give way to pedestrians who cross the street, and this is my favorite one, the more likely they are to take candy from children. I don't know how they studied that, but I thought that was interesting. I'm just reporting it. Now, we would like to think that we would be different in this, that if we had more money, that we would be happier and that we would not do what the study shows. But the reality is, maybe we wouldn't take candy from children, but the more money that we have, the more chances there are to be tempted to become more miserable. More money does not equal happiness, more happiness. In fact, it's often the opposite. More money often equals more unhappiness. There's a Time article that came out a while back, and it talked. It was titled, Here's How Winning the Lottery Makes You Miserable. And they gave a number of examples. I just pulled out the first one, and it was about Jack Whitaker. Whitaker was a 55-year-old business owner from West Virginia. He owned a construction company. And so even before winning $315 million, he had a lot of money. But after he won, things went downhill, the article said. He went broke within 4 years of making $315 million. And then after that, he lost both his daughter and granddaughter to drug overdose. And then he was robbed $500,000 while sitting in his car outside of a strip club. And so years later, this is what he said about winning all that money. He said, you know, my wife had said she wished that she had torn the ticket up. Well, I wish that we had torn the ticket up too. I just don't like Jack Whitaker. I don't like the hard heart I've got. I don't like what I've become. Money can make you miserable. Here's the last reason why. It's that you can't take it with you. You can't take it with you. We've talked about this a few weeks ago, so I'm not going to talk about it a long time. Let me read in verse 15. He says, everyone comes naked from their mother's womb, and as everyone comes, so they depart. So they take nothing from their toil that they can carry in their hands. This too is a grievous evil. As everyone comes, so they depart. And what do they gain since they toil for the wind, for nothing? Now, how many of you heard of the phrase birthday suit? Most of you probably know that phrase there. I decided after much wisdom, I'm not going to demonstrate that for you. But that's what Solomon is saying here. He's saying we all come out naked, and whether we're clothed or not in our coffin, we all return naked as well. And so Solomon's simply saying the obvious, that you cannot take your riches with you. You're going to leave with the same amount of stuff that you came with, and that's a big fat nothing. Nothing. Steve Jobs died in 2011. He's the founder of Apple, and this sermon that I am giving to you all was written on one of his expensive computers. And when he died, he was worth $10.2 billion. So how much did he take with him? What percent do you think he got to take with him when he died? Nothing. Nothing. Zero. Zero. And so, if that's the case, if we can't take it with us, if it's not going to bring us happiness, then why do we spend so much effort trying to accumulate it? Why do we spend, even up to our very last day, try to get more of it? So we're going to stop there, and we're going to transition. We've just seen five reasons why money will not make us satisfied. This now raises an important question. That if money does not satisfy, then how should we treat it? How should we treat it? Solomon gives the answer in the next part of our passage. And I'm going to focus on just two parts for the sake of time. We could have talked about more, but I'm just going to pull out two parts and bring up three points from it. And here's the first thing that we see, that we need to first make God more important than money. Amen. Skipping the verse, or to chapter 6, verses 10 through 12. I'll read just 12. It's sort of summarized in that verse. He says, for who knows what is good for a person in life during the few and meaningless days that they pass through like a shadow? For who can tell them what will happen under the sun after they're gone? So he asks these questions. He's saying, who knows what is good? He asks, who can tell what will happen here on this earth after people die? And he's not wondering because he doesn't know. He's raising this point because he's saying, hey, I can't do it. You can't do it. But God does. God knows. God's the one that knows what's good. God's the one that knows what will happen under the sun. You see, God existed before money. God is stronger than money. In fact, he is the creator of material things. And so, church, if there is one basket in which you should put all of your eggs, it is not the basket of money. It is the basket of God. And so if there is one thing that you should look to for satisfaction, it is not money. It should be looking to God for that satisfaction. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 8, he says, for whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake and for the gospel's will save it. For what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his soul? For what can a man give in return for his soul? So what he's saying is that if you try to save your life through worldly things, through money, then you're going to end up losing your life in the end. But if you try to lose your life in Jesus, in God, in the gospel, then you will actually end up saving it in the long run. Because ultimately, money will not help us spiritually. It will not help us spiritually. Only Jesus can do that. And so the only way to be truly saved is through faith in Jesus Christ. And the only way to find true satisfaction, ultimate satisfaction, is through life in Jesus Christ. And so don't make it to the end of your life and have an amazing bank account and a big house and a fancy car, but a poor relationship with God. For what can a man give in return for his soul? Jesus asks. So that's the first thing that we see, that we need to make God more important than money. But the second thing that we see in verses 18 through 20 of chapter 5 is that we need to enjoy what God has given us. We need to enjoy it. Back in chapter 5, Solomon says this. He says, "This is what I have observed to be good, that it is appropriate for a person to eat, to drink, and to find satisfaction in their toilsome labor under the sun during the few days of life God has given them. For this is their lot. Moreover, when God gives someone wealth and possessions and the ability to enjoy them, to accept their lot and to be happy in their toil, this is a gift of God. They seldom reflect on the days of their life because God keeps them occupied with gladness of heart." So I talked about this a few sermons ago, so I'm not going to go into this in depth now. But this is important for us to see, that God is not calling us to just take all of our money and just push it aside and live like hippies in North Conway. So God is not calling us to do that. Instead, we are called to enjoy what God has given us, but to enjoy it as a gift from Him. And so that money that you have right now, assuming that you've earned it legally, that money that you have right now is ultimately because God has blessed you with it. And you may think, no, Kyle, you don't know how hard I've worked. And I would say it's because God has blessed you with the ability to work hard, that you worked hard and earned that money. And you think, no, Kyle, I made some really good investments. And that's good. But I would say that that's because God blessed you with the ability to make those wise investments, that you ended up with that money. And so whatever you have is a gift from God. And so you need to treat it that way instead of it's yours, 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 and only yours. And if you will treat it as a gift from God, then it leads right into this last point here. And this is that we should give generously. Give generously. Now, this one is not specifically in our passage. This is more of an outworking of everything that we've talked about up to this point. You see, if money does not satisfy, and if God is the one who does satisfy, and if God is the one who blesses us with the money, then it should not be something we should be stingy with. Instead, we should be intentional about being generous. You see, a person who has been transformed by Jesus Christ will not only enjoy money as a gift from God, but will also give generously to others. Give generously. And so, do you want to break free from that hold that money has on you? Then you need to start to give generously. So put God first, and then start to give. Has God blessed you in so many different ways? But has God blessed you materially? Then be intentional about giving generously. So I want to encourage you to use what God has given you to bless others. I want to give you one way that you can do that
I know, particularly if you're new here, you're going to say that's very self-serving of you to say this, but I'm just going to go ahead. So you go on. You know, I don't talk about this a lot, but let me just encourage you that if you call Island Pond your home, I want to encourage you to give generously to your church. Give generously to your church. Every week, we have missionaries and we have ministries writing us, asking us for help, for financial help. And for most of them, we say, we would love to, but we're giving to others already. We just cannot give to more. And so if we had more people giving, then we would be able to give out to more ministries and more missionaries. The more that you give to the church, the more that you enable the church to reach others in the community. For example, it was just about a year ago today that this scary thing, COVID, happened. I know nothing came of it, but no, I'm just kidding. A lot changed. But a year ago, we had to shut down church. We had to all go to our internets, and we had to watch church on the internet. And I started hearing from people, we don't like the internet church. And so so we made a very, very fast decision. It was actually a Friday. I saw another church do it, actually advertise it. And I called up Richard, and he probably regrets answering that call. And I said, hey, Richard, do you think we can have the technology here? Do we have it to do a drive-in service? He said, well, maybe, yeah, we can probably work it out. And so we ended up, by that Sunday, getting what we needed, pulling parts from all the different parts of the church and having church outside and streaming it and doing all these things. And the reason I give this story is because we were able to do that because we had the money to buy things to immediately go and do ministry. Most of you, this will not apply to, but I did this character for the kids called Mr. Bible Man. And I dressed goofy, and I acted silly, and I read the Bible stories for the first couple of months during COVID. And the only reason that I was able to do that is because I went to Best Buy and bought the equipment that we needed to film it. You see, the reason that we are able to do ministry downstairs and up here, and you're able to hear us 90% of the time and without screeches. And all these things is because you give. In the coming weeks, you're going to hear about a new outreach that we're going to be doing called Pray and Go, where we're going to be taking little hangers and putting them on doors or on somewhere not on the mailbox. As I learned, it's illegal to do that. And we're going to pray for that house and just let them know that we prayed for them. And we're going to aim to get it all over Hampstead. But you know what? Hangers cost money. Training costs money. And the reason we're able to do these things is because people generously give. And so I say all that the more that you give generously to the church, the more that we are then able to use what is given to reach those outside the church and to reach those here inside the church. So I want to encourage you again, if Island Pond is your church home, then give generously to your church. Now I want to close with a story, and this is not one that I typically will close with. It's not a true story. It's more of a parable. And it's one that you have to think about at the end. But I at the risk of not telling a very good closing story, I'm going to go ahead and give it. You're just going to bear with me for a moment here. So there was a rich man, and he was about to die. And he was very sad because this rich man had a lot of money, and he worked very hard for it all his life. And so he began to pray, asking God to allow him to bring money with him into heaven. And so he prayed, and he prayed, and he prayed. And finally, one day, there was an angel that showed up to his bedside. And he asked the angel, he said, please, let me take some stuff with me. And the angel said, no, you're not allowed.
And the man said, please, just go back and ask God and see if you can get special permission. And so the angel went back and he came back. And he said, well, actually, you are now allowed to bring one suitcase with you when you die. So the man was very excited. He got the biggest suitcase he could find. And he filled it up with pure gold bars. And he'd set it right next to his bed, and then he waited to die. And sure enough, he died, and he ended up outside the gates of heaven, and he had his suitcase with him. When he gets there, there's Peter, and Peter says, you know, because Peter's always on the outside of these types of stories here, there's Peter saying, hey, wait, hey, you can't come in there with that. And the old man says, I was given special permission. Can you go and check? So Peter goes and checks. And he comes back and he says, oh, yeah, you're allowed to bring one suitcase in, but they asked me to check it first before you come in. And so the old man unzips it and he opens up and he shows him these pure gold bars, the things that are most precious to him that he wanted to take with him when he died. And Peter looks down and he looks at them and he inspects them and he looks up and he looks up confused at the man and he says, you brought pavement? Think about that. Now again, not a true story. Not giving a theological framework for the afterlife here. But how many of us would this be true for us? How many of us would be like that man? Where we want so desperately to bring these things with us because they're so important to us. And Peter, or God, or an angel, or whatever, would say, hey, those things that are just so worthless, or that are so important to you, what you're trying to bring in is just worthless. You're trying to bring in pavement here, because the streets of heaven are paved with gold. It's going to be that glorious. So anything that you hold on to so dearly on this earth is going to be nothing compared to what we see in heaven. And so I want to encourage you, don't cling on to those things thinking that that's what I need to bring with me to be happy in heaven. Don't cling on so closely to these things. Instead, cling on to God. Put your satisfaction in God. And when you do have, when you are blessed with money, then yes, enjoy it as a gift from God and be generous with it to those around you. But if you will do that, then you will not let money take hold of your heart. So let's put our satisfaction in God alone. Amen? Amen. Let's go ahead and pray, and worship team, come on up.